Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings be upon you. I'm here sitting in university in Birmingham, which is a place I've been invited to come and talk to you about how I found Islam and how I embraced the religion of Islam. I want to talk about, first of all, a bit about my background. Born in Warwickshire, I grew up in the local area here, and I come from a Christian family. I was brought up as a Christian, go to church once a week, and pretty much had a fairly typical upbringing. Went to school locally here, and then went to boarding school for 5 years, and later on to university. And the fact that we're sitting in university here is coincidental, in the sense that this is where my particular journey began while I was studying at university. And one of the things that I found throughout my childhood, I was obviously quite interested in religion. I was very interested in spirituality, and through my school years as well, I started to research into spirituality. And one of the things I found when I came to university was that the life here was very devoid of any spirituality. It was very much about me, what I want, and it was to the detriment of everybody else. And the lifestyle was very hedonistic at uni. A lot of drinking, a lot of socializing, mixing with girls and boys together. And generally, was seen to be the thing to do. So obviously, being a person who didn't have any particular guidance or any way of understanding life, I just went along with the crowd, and I just followed the majority of what other people were doing. I never really thought about what I was doing. But I think it was probably after the first year of uni that I started to feel the results of that, which were, I started to feel very disillusioned. I started to feel very lost. I started asking myself question about whether this really was what life was really about, whether we should be behaving in this way, and was there something deeper and something more meaningful that I should know about? And these questions started asking a lot of questions within myself, and I wanted to find the answers. And it was a very frustrating time for me, because I couldn't find the answers anywhere. I had no one to talk to. My associates in university, my friends, they didn't understand what I was going through. And they just saw it as strange behavior, asking strange questions. So I resolved myself to find the answers for myself. So I started by looking really in the libraries, and looking for books that might give me some guidance. So I started looking into philosophy. I read the Western philosophers, their ideas. I read some of the Eastern philosophy. And one book I came across actually was a real turning point for me, and I want to share that with you. It was written by an English writer called Colin Wilson, and it was called The Outsider. I just happened to come upon this book in a film, and went out, found the book, and read it, and sat down and read it from cover to cover, and I was just amazed at the ideas within the book. And the book called The Outsider was about individuals, famous individuals, people who were involved in the arts, or people who were philosophers themselves, who were trying to connect with the divine. And this is something that struck a chord within me. And so I read this book about which included people from all religions, all philosophies. And through that, I realized that there were certain individuals within the Muslim faith who were trying to reach, or had connected to, that divine reality, who is our creator. And that really interested me. And these people were known as the Sufis within this book and within the tradition. And so I was interested to find out more about them, and who they were, and what they believed, and how they were able to connect themselves to this divine presence. So I started to read a lot of their poetry. I read the main poet that I used to read a lot of was Rumi, Jalaluddin Rumi, who is very well known in the West. He's probably one of the most popular writers in America, most popular poets known in America and in the West. And I just fell in love with his poetry. I mean, it used to move me so much into tears. Sometimes I used to cry over his poetry because it was so beautiful, and it just speaks directly to the soul. And therefore, I started to read a lot of his works. And there was one particular experience that I had while I was still in there. Actually reading one of his poems, I was standing in the library and I just found a new book, and I was reading through the poetry, and there was one line of verse which just struck me, and it shook me inside so much that I fell to the floor, and I had an overwhelming urge to prostrate on the floor, and I didn't know why, but there was just something that the poem, the line basically said was about letting go of yourself, about letting go of your lower desires, and about connecting to the higher presence of our Creator. So I didn't know what to do. I felt I had to pray, but I didn't know where I was supposed to go and pray. So the first place I went to was a church, thinking that I would find peace in there, which it was. It was very peaceful in there. But I knew, obviously, that the church wasn't a place. Christianity wasn't a faith that I wanted to pursue, but I wanted somewhere quiet to go and just to pray. And after this time of researching, I realized that these people, the people who were known as the Sufis, had something that I needed. They had something that I wanted, and I was determined to find that, and determined to find the truth and find that connection. So I sat down with a map and a few books, and I planned a journey. And I decided that I would travel to the Middle East and to actually meet these people and find out more about them, how they lived and who they were. So I had a few addresses, I had a few places of interest. One of the places that really struck me to go to was Konya, because Konya is the birthplace and the burial place of Jalaluddin Rumi. And I was very attracted towards him, obviously, and I felt a connection with him. And therefore, I wanted to go and visit his place of birth and see if I could contact anybody who might know about his teachings or who might follow him. And there was other places I wanted to go to. Damascus was another place that I was really interested in and I've read a lot about. There was other famous mystic poets in Damascus. Ibn al-Arabi was one of them who I was very interested in. So I dropped out of uni, unfortunately, to my parents' horror. They tried to obviously talk me around and say, you know, you should carry on with your degree, you should finish your studies, but I felt that there's such an urge within me, I needed to go and do this, and I didn't want to let anything get in my way. So I packed my bags, just a few possessions, a change of clothes, and I moved out of my house at uni, and I sold all of my, everything that I owned, actually, to get enough money to go on this journey. And I felt that I would find what I was looking for if I made the effort to actually follow my heart, you know. And that's what I was convinced, that if I followed my heart and I followed this aspiration I had to go and meet these people, then I would find the truth. And so with this conviction inside me very, very strong, I set off for Istanbul. When I arrived in Istanbul, I didn't know where to stay. I didn't have any hotel booked, but I knew that I would find somewhere. So I just went around finding a place to stay, and I found a place to stay. And I spent probably 2 or 3 weeks in Istanbul, going around the mosques, looking to talk to people about Islam, trying to find out, trying to be an observer, really, more than anything. Not necessarily trying to contact people, but just I would go into the mosques and I would sit at the back of the mosque, and I would just observe and watch people. And I'd also read in the books that, you know, about what they call dhikr, which is a kind of way of praying. And so I had a tespi. Actually, what it was, it's a string of beads. And a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine from uni, had been to Greece, and he brought me back these worry beads. And it just happened that at the same time I was reading about the practices of the Sufis and the mystics of Islam, and that they would recite dhikr, that they would recite prayers on their beads. So having this beads with me was quite good, because I used to sit at the back of the mosque and I would say La ilaha illallah. I would say La ilaha illallah over and over, and even I knew what it meant because I'd read it in the book. I didn't really know how to say it, but even just reciting that was just absolutely incredible feeling to me. Not having experiencing any spirituality before, but suddenly I felt my heart was just like elevated. You know, I was being elevated to a different level, and I was just like almost flying. You know, I was walking through the streets of Istanbul reciting this dhikr, La ilaha illallah, in my heart, and I just felt I was flying constantly, and I was just in a state of real closeness to my Creator. Even though I hadn't taken the Shahada, I hadn't accepted the religion, but I just felt in my heart, I felt I already had at that stage, I think. And I was just looking for a reason, really, a proof for me to say that yes, this is a sign, or this is it, you know, this is what I was looking for. So I think the thing that really was the turning point for me and convinced me that Islam is the true religion was an experience I had through traveling. And I had got a visa from London to go to Syria in transit through Turkey. So after a couple of weeks in Turkey of, you know, seeing the sights and being amongst the people, I decided that we're going to go down to Syria. So I travelled and I sort of hitchhiked and caught coaches through Turkey. I visited Konya, which is an amazing experience for me, to see where Rumi was buried and where he lived and where he grew up. And that was a very emotional time as well. I remember, and I was also feeling quite lonely because I was on my own travelling. I remember booking into one hotel and it was just totally empty because it was during Ramadan. And everybody was like, it's out of season. And it was just like one of these old mental homes or mental hospitals that you see in the films. It's like completely deserted, huge place with lots of rooms. And I didn't get there till very late at night. And it was just, I remember sleeping in this very cold room with like a kind of rickety old bed. And I was just kind of actually feeling quite emotional and quite sensitive. And I was crying a lot. And I was crying to my Creator, in actual fact. I was crying to God to show me the way, to show me a sign, or to show me the path, or to show me people who could guide me to Him. And after I spent a few days in Konya, I decided again to, as I said, to move onto Syria. So I got to the border, and it's a very long journey to get to the border. It takes many hours to get there. And I eventually got there, I think it was in the night, and presented my passport, and there was a problem with my passport. They would not let me through the border, and I had to catch a taxi to get to the border as well. So it was very difficult to get there, and I was really despairing. I didn't know what to do. I was just really, you know, worried about that. I was in the middle of nowhere. I didn't know how to get across the border because they wouldn't let me there. So even though I had a visa, they were adamant that they weren't going to let me through. And I thought, what am I going to do? You know, I have to go all the way back to Ankara, which is the capital of Turkey, to get another visa to go to Syria. So I felt within me, there's a reason why I'm not supposed to go across this border, and that God was intervening somehow. I really felt that. And therefore, I just accepted it. And on reflecting on it, I just accepted it. And I said, okay, fine, I'll go back. So 2 days travel back to Ankara on the coaches, stopping overnight. Eventually got to the embassy in Ankara to reapply for my visa. And I was waiting for my visa to be processed when I met somebody who came up to me and said, speaking in English, he looked like a Turkish man. In fact, he was a Turkish man speaking in English. And he's saying, excuse me, can I help you? You look like you're not from around here. Is there anything I can do to help? And I explained what had happened, and he was very sympathetic and very kind. You know, his words were very kind, and he seemed like he really cared about what happened to me, and that really touched me. And I thought, you know, this is a really kind person. And he actually turned around and offered to take me in his car. He said, "I live near the border of Syria. I'll drive you 10-hour drive to my home. You can stay overnight in my village, and then I can take you to the border." And I was just like, at first I was quite suspicious, because I thought, you know, in England, when they offer to help you, the first thing you ask is, you know, what does this person want from me? You know, is there something wrong with him, or is he going to harm me or something? But I just felt that this person was very sincere, and I thought, that's very kind of you, yeah, and I accepted. So we both got in the car and we started to drive, and we drove for maybe 5-6 hours. And stopping along the way, we had food, and he bought food for me, and he was just a very, very caring person, a very, very nice person. And as we were driving through along the motorway, he started to ask me questions about, you know, why I was in Turkey and what I was doing, and, you know, my background and stuff. And we eventually got round to the subject of Islam. Obviously, he was a Muslim. And I think even it was during Ramadan, and he was actually fasting, and he actually bought me food and sat there while I ate my food. And even though he wasn't eating at all. But when he asked me, we started to talk about Islam. And we got into the conversation of, you know, I got into the conversation and I was telling him that I was really interested in poetry and I was really interested in Rumi. And he turned around to me and he said, "Do you mean Jalaluddin Rumi?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Do you know that I am the direct descendant of Jalaluddin Rumi? He is my great, 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 great grandfather." And when he said that to me, my heart just like jumped. I just wanted to jump out of my seat. I just couldn't believe what a coincidence this was. In fact, I couldn't believe that it was a coincidence. It had to be, you know, my creator was guiding me. He was connecting me with the people that I was looking for. And my heart, I was just so happy. I was just overflowing. I was just starting to cry, because it was just like a moment of relief and a moment of pure just thankfulness to God that he showed me, he connected me with the people that I was trying to find. And so I explained to him, you know, why I was really on this journey and who I was trying to find, and that, you know, it was amazing that he was sitting here in front of me, the direct descendant of Rumi, and a person who has followed his teachings and understood his teachings and had read the poems and studied the poems that I was reading, and someone who could connect me with this divine presence that I was looking for. So he took me to his home. I stayed with him for 2 days. He took me around his village and we got to know each other, you know, very well. And he told me that when I came back to Turkey, I should come and meet his father, because his father was actually the head of the silsila, if you like, or the group of students that followed the teachings of Mawlana Rumi. And if you've ever heard of the dervishes, the whirling dervishes, that they actually he was practicing this way of Islam, of the spirituality of Islam, and his father was actually a lecturer who went around the world lecturing about the poetry of Rumi and the teachings of Rumi. So I was just overcome. I just couldn't believe that I found this person. And I definitely took his contact and said, "When I'm back in Istanbul, I will come meet you." So having got the visa, I decided that I would go on to Damascus, and I spent 2 or 3 weeks in Damascus, again traveling and meeting people and just observing Islam. And when I got back to Turkey, I spent again more time. I met a lot of the Shayukh of Konya and of Istanbul through this brother that I'd met. And I was put in touch with a lot of people who were very spiritual people, people who I consider to be very close to their creator. And I remember visiting one very, very elderly man who lived in the suburbs of Istanbul, and was going down into his basement, and he was called, they called him Dede, which is like a term of respect, who was like a sheikh, if you like, or a teacher or a scholar. And I remember going down to his flat, and when I went into his flat, I kissed his hand, and I just felt he was very, a man of Allah, a man of God. You know, there's no doubt, because he was very elderly, and he's one of these people who, just in his presence, you feel the presence of God, you know, because they are they're in remembrance constantly. And I remember him taking one of he did like a blessing on me, and I remember him taking one of the Maulavi, one of the hats that they wear, and he was reading some ayahs of Quran, and he blew into the hat, and then it's like a way of connecting you to that chain that goes back to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And when he placed the hat on my head, I just felt very, 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 a lot of peace inside me, and I felt very spiritual. And probably for the next 2 days after that, I was just actually quite in a state of ecstasy, if you like, if you can call it that. Feeling very close to my Lord, and feeling a lot of connection to God. And I felt that, yes, you know, this is the right thing, and this convinced me without a doubt that Islam is the truth, and that these people are connected to the divine, and that they have an understanding between themselves and their creator. So, having met my friend Farouk, his name is, who drove me to the border in Syria, having met his father in Istanbul, he gave me some contacts in the UK of people who were on the path of spirituality in Islam. And I travelled back to the UK, and I met up with a brother who works in the library, British Library, who's actually in charge of the Oriental manuscripts, mashallah, a brother who's very dear to me, because he helped me to guide me to Islam. And he told me of various people and groups within the UK that I could speak to, and, you know, good Muslim brothers that I could get advice from. So having connected with these people, I presently took my Shahada in Sheffield, which is, I actually ended up back to the same road that I actually lived on when I was studying at uni. And it happened that there's a mosque on the same road that I never knew was a mosque, because it was actually an old church. And I used to walk past there every day virtually. And I actually took my Shahada in that place, which was an incredible circle, if you like, coming back, a huge circle that I travelled physically, and within myself I went on this huge journey, and I ended up back where I started, which is amazing, because it's kind of a simile to, you know, how we all come from our Creator, and we go back to Him, you know, and this is our, we go back to our origins from where we came from. So after taking Shahada, I went actually back to Birmingham. I lived with my family there, and I went back to stay with my parents. And obviously my parents were quite shocked with my choice of religion, and they kind of didn't understand it at first. They're very, very good people, and I love them very much. I mean, they're very respectful, and I think it was more of a shock to them, really, because it meant that I kind of, not rejected, but chose a different path to them. And I think every parent wants their child to follow in their own path and their own way. And I understand that, because I have my own children now, and I want my children to follow my religion. But for them, I think it was quite a shock. And I have two sisters as well, who, through the time, very, very, very soon after I embraced Islam, I remember at first I used to have to kind of pray in secret, if you like, until I kind of explained to my parents what I was doing, because I was quite nervous about how they would react. And I used to get up very quietly in the middle of the night and try and make wudu, and it was quite funny, because I'd have a kind of bowl of water and take it into my room. And, you know, my mum actually cottoned onto this after about a couple of months, and she asked me, what were you doing with a bowl of water in your bedroom at like 3-4 o'clock in the morning? I was actually making wudu, you know. So and I started to talk to my sisters about Islam as well, and I used to kind of have private conversations in the house with them. And they saw a change in me. They saw a huge change in me, because I never used to, you know, we had the kind of relationship where, you know, we'd sort of pass on the stairs and, you know, sort of make snide remarks at each other, you know. And we had I had a huge change with my relationship with my sisters. I became very, very close to them. And through the change that they saw within me, they started to look more into Islam, and they actually, alhamdulillah, you know, they embraced Islam about a year after me. And that is such a blessing, you know, to have someone in your own family who's of the same faith. It's such a valuable thing, you know, and a blessing to have. And I actually had to move out of home at that point, because my parents were really upset about that, that my sisters also became Muslim. They were very, very upset, and they didn't understand. And at that point, I moved out of home, and I lived near the local mosque for probably a few months, and I moved back home. And I wanted to learn more about my faith. I had a huge urge to gain knowledge of my faith. I wanted to know what the Quran said. I wanted to understand the Quran, and I felt so much peace in my salah and my prayers, and just an amazing time. The first year that you become Muslim, it's just, you know, God lifts a veil from your heart, and it's like a key. You know, when you say the Shahada, when you say La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah, it's literally like a key that unlocks the mercy, and the mercy starts to flow into your heart, you know. And before I said those words, it was very different. It's almost like my Creator like just lifted a veil off my heart, and I could see things differently. I could see the reality. I could see into things, and to understand things in a depth that I never understood before. And it's almost like that was veiled for me before I became Muslim. And so I wanted to study more. So I actually went to I spent a couple of years in Damascus in Syria. I went back to the place that I visited as a non-Muslim, which is again an amazing experience, you know, to go back to the same places that I went to. And I had an incredible experience out there. Again, just Damascus is just an awesome place. It's just so spiritual and so full of people who have so much knowledge, you know. And I really get benefited from them. And I also married in Damascus, and I met my wife there. And my wife came back to the UK after 2 years with me. And now we live in Birmingham. We have, alhamdulillah, we have children. We have 4 children, alhamdulillah. One of the messages I would like to, and I hope that, you know, my story has struck a chord with non-Muslims, because I feel it's wrong for me to keep this this message and this faith that I found just to myself. You know, I feel I have a duty to tell others, or to share, not necessarily to go out and preach, but to share with others experiences that I've had, because I know there are a lot of people out there who are searching for the truth, and I want to give some advice to them. And I want to say that, you know, you should follow your heart, and whatever your heart says, and the most important thing is to acknowledge that you do have a Creator, that there is someone who's created you, and who is looking after you, and who's guiding you, and who is feeding you, and who you're going to one day have to go and meet that Creator, because you're going to go back to the place you came from. And Islam is not a stranger, you know, it's not a stranger. Muslims may be strangers, but Islam is not a stranger. And you do not have to change your culture to become Muslim. You do not have to change your name to become Muslim. You do not have to change your clothes to become Muslim. The only thing you have to change is your way of thinking, your belief, and your acknowledging that you have a Creator who is guiding you and who is protecting you. And Islam is not a difficult religion to follow. It's an easy religion to follow. All it takes is to acknowledge that there is a God, and that there's a messenger who he sent, whose name is Muhammad, peace and blessing be upon him. and everything else after that becomes easy. So it's not difficult to become Muslim. And I urge, you know, it's, you have to have courage, yes, because you have to, in a sense, make some sacrifices. You may have to make some sacrifices with your friends, or your colleagues at university. They might not understand. You may have to make sacrifices with your family, because they may not understand. They may not agree with your choice of lifestyle or your choice of belief. But you don't have to change everything to become Muslim, because Muslim Islam is like, it's like a water that takes on, that reflects whatever culture it flows through, and whatever color it touches, it takes on that color. So it's not a stranger. And I hope that, you know, my story gives you courage to go out there and to find the truth and to follow your heart and to know that Islam, there's something within Islam that you should look into. And I ask that whoever's watching this film, that you pray for me and you pray for my forgiveness and you pray for my guidance and you pray for my family and my wife and my children. And I know that, inshallah, God willing, many more people will embrace this religion, because when they look with a sincere heart and an honest heart, they will see that there's great benefit and great blessings in this religion that they can benefit from. And I'd like to thank you for giving me the time to talk to you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.